I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Big day for Israel. Hamas will no longer rule Gaza. The mastermind of October 7th is dead. Yeah, that's right. Big, big day. Wonderful day. And we'll talk to Dr. Victoria Coates about it a little bit later in the show. Welcome back. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210. And on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. And that is the big story of the hour. And it is a big deal. It really is. That Israel got this guy. The mastermind of October 7th. Deadliest day for Jewish people, for the Israeli people, since the Holocaust. And that is the top story of the day, brought to you by Dr. Mike Venaria. Dr. Venaria is the master of implant dentistry and named the top dentist in New Jersey for 10 consecutive years. Schedule your free implant consultation today by calling 856-786-2020. All right, look, the interview yesterday on Fox News with Kamala Harris and Bret Baier. And we are streaming live on YouTube right now, youtube.com/1210WPHD. She refused to acknowledge Joe Biden's cognitive decline while baselessly attacking President Trump's fitness. This is part of the conversation last night on the interview with Bret Baier. And, you know, at the funeral for Ethel Kennedy yesterday, Obama and Biden are chatting. The New York Post hires a lip reader, this lip reader who's renowned. It's testified in court and whatnot. And the lip reader says what they're talking about is Joe Biden says, "She's not as strong as me." And Obama's like, "Yeah, I know." And Obama's like, "We have time." And Biden's like, "I don't know." This is not a good campaign. And Biden is happy about the fact that she's losing because he wants her to lose, because he wants everybody to say, had you been in the race, Joe, you could have won. I got to be honest with you. If Josh Shapiro were on the ticket on a day like today when Israel has killed the leader, the mastermind of the October 7th attack, it would have been a very, very tough day for me, because I think Shapiro would be all over the place right now as the potential VP, doing a much better job representing the campaign than that goofball Tim Walz. And as a Jewish guy and the governor of Pennsylvania, it would be a much different thing. But she didn't pick him because he's Jewish. So today when Israel kills the leader of Hamas, they can't have Josh Shapiro out there taking a victory lap. They can't have Josh Shapiro taking a victory lap on behalf of the Jewish people, on behalf of the administration, Kamala Harris's team, blah, blah, blah. Big mistake not picking him. But the reason why they didn't pick him is because he's Jewish. And the other thing, too, is that since they didn't pick him, he's pulling his punches and he's not helping her in Pennsylvania, which is good. It's great for us. I mean, it was great. Look, the best thing was the day that they announced that it was going to be Tim Walz. This is the best. I was so happy that day. I said, we're going to win Pennsylvania now. Not that we couldn't have won it if Shapiro was on the ticket, but it would have just been harder. You know, it would have been a much more uphill challenge. This is a different ballgame. And when you think about the way her campaign is flailing, I think Shapiro's come to the conclusion she's going to lose, and I'm running. I'm running for president in 4 years. So why help her? I mean, we'll do the pro forma. You know, we'll do the basics here, but we're not going to go overboard. All right, we're not going overboard with this thing. And when a candidate knows they're losing, their energy that they project is the kind of energy that Kamala Harris is projecting to Bret Baier. Bret Baier. It is an anger. It is a hostility. It is a defensive posture. Whereas when you see Trump, I think he knows he's winning. He's seen the internal polling numbers. He has a confidence about him, an air about him. He's almost much more relaxed lately than he's been in a long, long time. I mean, even when he's doing the interview with the women and Harris Faulkner, and I know Harris Faulkner likes him and everything like that, but still very relaxed in his element. You know, does the is it Univision or Telemundo town hall today? Very relaxed. You know, he's good. He's okay. Kamala Harris is not relaxed. She seems uptight. It's when a candidate knows that they are losing and they're running out of time. And I think you saw it on the Charlemagne the God interview. I think you've seen it even in the softball, even in the what should have been happy-go-lucky interviews. The fact that when she was on The View and they said, "Well, what would you change?" She goes, "Nothing comes to mind." That's from a candidate who's stressed out because they're losing the election. And they're so afraid to even come out and step out of line and say what they would do differently than Joe Biden. I mean, biggest thing here that I can't understand is why you won't come out and say one thing you'd do differently than Joe Biden. Just pick one. Pick one thing. Now, the obvious thing is to come out and say you would immediately, as president, reverse the ban on the export of liquid natural gas. But you don't say that because you're worried about the climate kooks not coming out to vote for you. So they put themselves in such a corner right now that even though that issue would resonate in Pennsylvania, they're afraid to say it because they're worried about the fallout would be with climate kooks. You can come out and say, I'm going to reverse the EPA's essential ban on gas-powered cars. Those regulations, I'm going to reverse them to help the Michigan auto workers. Again, can't do it. They worry that the climate kooks will stay home. And you know why that is? They have not locked up their base. I told you months ago, Joe Biden had not locked down crazy. Well, he has not locked down his crazy base. He didn't, and she has not locked it down either. That's why even in her statement today on Israel, she wound up still kind of putting it out there like, you know, this war has to end. And had Netanyahu listened to this administration and gone with a ceasefire months ago like they wanted, leader of Hamas would probably be alive today. The mastermind of October 7th would probably be alive today. So it's a campaign that is losing and floundering. And I've seen this before in politics. And it's not a good place to be, especially when you're on that campaign. It kind of feels in some ways when if you've ever known somebody who's like gone through a divorce, for example, and you know the marriage is coming to an end and the court date's set and you're kind of waiting and you're waiting it out and it's just, you know, and you know the inevitable's there. You're not saving this thing and you just kind of want it to happen, but the court date's not for like a month. You know what I mean? You know that you just want to get it over with, except if you're the divorce attorney. You want to drag it out because you're making money. And the political consultants are the kind of the divorce attorneys in this scenario. You know, they want to drag this out because they're all about to lose their jobs. All the people on the Harris campaign, the pollsters, all the other people, the mail people, the TV people, they're all about to lose their work, their income. And now they got to figure out what they're going to do in 2025, in a year where you only have two elections that are going to make real money for them. Jersey governor's race and Virginia's governor's race, and that's it. So they're like, I don't know, you know, what do we do? All right. Anyway, Kamala Harris with Brett Baer last night, refusing to acknowledge Joe Biden's cognitive decline. Let's play and look at, if you're streaming live on YouTube right now, 1210 WPHD, cut number three.
I think Kirk has the Elon Musk stream.
Oh, do you?
I think.
Oh, is he speaking right now? Is he? I don't see it on TV. Are they streaming? Kirk, what are you looking at over there?
I got the cut from Brett Baer.
Oh, okay. But do you have the Elon Musk stream as well?
I'm still looking at it. I'm doing multitasking here.
Okay, multitasking. All right, no problem. Let's do cut number three. Go ahead.
I have watched from the Oval Office.
Kirk, you're going to have to mute the Elon Musk stream because I'm getting both sets audio.
All right, you know what? It's okay. What we'll do is has the Elon Musk thing started, Kirk? Just yes or no. Has it started? Kirk?
No, it has not.
It has not started. All right, do me a favor. Let's just do this. You just keep monitoring that, and we'll see if we can, dip into it. And in the meantime, we'll play a little audio, and we'll hold on the video for a moment, and we'll see if we can grab that for us. Because I got a ton of cuts here. I got a lot of cuts, and some of them are audio. For example, and this is a good one here. Mark Halperin was on with Tucker Carlson predicting what will happen when Trump is elected. It's kind of a longer clip, but I think this is important to know. He talked to Tucker Carlson. There's going to be workplace fights, violent protests launched by the left. You know how the media is always out there like, oh, there's going to be a civil war. If Trump loses, there's going to be a civil war in this country. It's essentially what Mark Halperin is predicting if Trump wins in some ways. I wonder what you think about this. So let's take a listen to cut 15.
Let's say Trump wins 3 weeks from today. Mm-hmm. What happens? The Democratic Party is, I mean, as you said, a lot of Democrats, maybe the majority, believe that Trump becoming president again is the worst thing that ever could happen. So how do they respond to that?
I say this not flippantly. I think it will be the cause of the greatest mental health crisis in the history of the country. I think tens of millions of people will question their connection to the nation, their connection to other human beings, their connection to their vision of what their future for them and their children could be like. And I think that it will be require an enormous amount of access to mental health professionals. I think it'll lead to trauma in the workplace. I think there'll be some degree of...
Are you being serious?
100% serious. 100% serious. I think there'll be alcoholism. There'll be broken marriages.
What?
Yeah. They think he's the worst person possible to be president. And having won by the hand of Jim Comey and Fluke in 2016 and then performed in office for 4 years and denied who won the election last time and January 6th, the fact that under a fair election, America chose by the rules pre-agreed to, Donald Trump again, I think it will cause the biggest mental health crisis in the history of America. And I don't think it will be kind of a passing thing that by the inauguration will be fine. I think it will be sustained and unprecedented and hideous. And I don't think the country's ready for it.
So mental health crises often manifest in violence.
Yeah, I think there'll be some violence. I think there'll be workplace fights. There'll be fights at kids' birthday parties. I think there'll be protests that will turn violent. I hope they're not, but I think there will be some. But I think it will be more, it'll be less anger and more a failure to understand how it could happen. You know, like the death of a child or your spouse announcing that you know, your wife announcing she's a lesbian and she's leaving you for your best friend. Like a something that's so traumatic that it is impossible for even the most mentally healthy person to truly process and incorporate into their daily life. I hope I'm wrong, but I hope he's wrong too.
Look, what he's laying out here, in some ways, I think you can understand this in your own life. If you have people who hate Donald Trump, who are involved in your life in some way, shape or form. And what comes to my mind immediately is the pink hat lady. You remember the pink hat lady screaming after Trump's election? Couldn't believe it. Couldn't process this. I think when you look at the average person who hates Trump's guts, I mean, hates him. Ask yourself, if you are a Trump supporter, has your relationship with that person frayed in any way, shape or form? And if it has, then what you're talking about, what you just heard there on a micro scale has happened in your life. Maybe you've lost a friend. Maybe a family member doesn't like you anymore because of this. Maybe your relationship is strained over Donald Trump. It's happened to me. I mean, I know this. It's happened to me with some family members on my wife's side of the family. I know it has. Now, for them, the idea of Trump winning, is it as traumatic and shocking and triggering and this PTSD that will be created where they're not going to be able to grasp it and understand it? I think there is a sense of denial within the Democrat Party right now over these poll numbers, as if they're not real, as if they're actually going to wind up eking out a win here because Trump is just so terrible. How can anybody rightfully in their mind vote for the guy? This disconnect is the same disconnect they had in 2016, which is why Hillary Clinton never campaigned in the Rust Belt, because they couldn't understand from their loft in Brooklyn where Robbie Mook, and what kind of a grown man goes by Robbie? Robbie Mook calling the shots in Williamsburg. Couldn't understand how anybody could vote for this monster. Wasn't thinking about the auto worker in Michigan, the guy in the fossil fuel industry in Pennsylvania, the people in the steel towns, the coal people, whatever. Couldn't process this because they're so out of touch with working people, and their hatred of Trump in such a way. They don't have the ability to transcend that in their thinking and understand how people could vote for him because of his policies. They don't get it. In their mind, anybody who votes for him is a Kool-Aid drinking cult member, and that's just it. I mean, I get that accusation all the time. I'm a Kool-Aid drinking cult member. Not a day goes by someone on Twitter doesn't call me a member of a cult. Like, I think Trump's policies are better for America. I don't like all of Trump's policies, but I think his policies are better for America. But you can't even you can't express that to somebody who says that, because you turn around and you go, wait a second. What was this policies thing you're talking about? The man's just a monster. His very presence. He's just a monster. How can you possibly support him? Well, I think he'd be better than Kamala Harris. I think he'd be better for our country. I think he'd be better for world peace. I think he'd be better for all those things. I like his policies more. But if you can't see past the person because of your hatred towards that person in such a way, because you've made them a caricature, it's not even real. And all you see is this orange blob of fascism or whatever else they've conjured up in their heads. And they're unwilling to put themselves into the shoes of somebody who would benefit from those policies. They can't grasp it. So they think at the end of the day, the Democrats are going to win this election because Orange Man bad. And that's it. Orange Man bad. That's it. But how could anybody in the right mind vote for this guy? And when you go to him, but listen, if you're a steel worker, if you're a truck driver and you don't want to have some ridiculous EV mandate where your truck, somebody said the other day that big rig trucks, EVs, takes 42 hours to charge them. And you got these truckers sleeping at rest stops to charge their truck to go another like 300 miles. Who in their right friggin' mind would want that if you're a truck driver? You could understand why the Teamsters are like, we're not backing Kamala Harris, and why 60% of our members are backing Trump. But if you are a lefty in Center City in Rittenhouse Square, and all you see in Trump bad, you can't transcend those policies. Or if you do, you think that people who don't support those climate policies are an existential threat to humanity. It's almost like a child, like Greta Thunberg with the how dare you, a child who can't grasp something beyond just, well, this is how it is, and that's the end of it. And there's no nuance with them either. Climate change is going to destroy the world. How the hell we're all still here? Who knows? And anybody who disagrees with that is a bad person. The systemic racism is real. And if you disagree with that, you're a bad person. You know, racism, sexism, all these things, these are real things. If you disagree with that, you're a bad person. You can't. There's no nuance. There's no policy. And this is where I come back to the James Carville quote of the Democrat Party has become the party of the faculty lounge and the coastal elites, because that's all they know when it's all they're talking about. You're espousing a theory and then you're doubling down, tripling down on that theory over and over again. And you're not willing to entertain other ways to look at that theory. That's why they've decided the science of climate change, for example. And you can't go out of the parameters of that. You're not allowed to do that. You understand? There's no nuance with that. And because of that fact, every single person, and I mean this now, every single person who hates Donald Trump can't understand how you, as a rational person, as a good person, could vote for him. Therefore, you can't be a rational good person. Ergo, you are a bad person too. And for that reason, they can't like you. They don't like you, and they can't like you, and they also think you're stupid. And that's why you see relationships frayed. And there's a concept in psychology too, where people, the cognitive dissonance of trying to then wrap their arms around how you could support. Like, I get it. You know, if somebody's a Democrat and they don't like Trump's policies and they really believe Kamala Harris's policies are better for America, like, I'll have a disagreement with them on that. But if they're only voting for Kamala Harris because they hate Donald Trump, and inevitably they're going to hate me for supporting Donald Trump, they're going to put me down, they're going to mock me, they're going to belittle me, because the cognitive dissonance in their mind that how I could be a good person to support a man who's so bad, they can't go with that. So they just have to come to the conclusion, therefore, I'm bad too. You're bad too. And then how can we be friends? How can we be family members? How can we be coworkers? How can we coexist? It's funny because they're the ones with the coexist stickers on their car, but they never want to coexist. They can't. It's not rational. There's nothing rational about this. And they'll blame Trump for how irrational they are. And then they'll spew lies. Like on The View today, they're spewing lies that Trump's going to use the military and start killing liberals. Like, use the military to just start killing liberals. And they spew this stuff on daytime television. So, you know, imagine somebody who's at the gym or they're waiting to get their oil changed or wherever, you know what I mean? They're at a dentist's office, not Dr. Venaria's office, I can tell you that. And they're watching this crap and they're like, he's going to use the military to kill kill liberals? And what? And people who believe this crap are like, how can you support somebody who would have the military fire guns on people who politically disagree with Donald Trump? So they spew these lies out there, and when Election Day comes and Trump ultimately wins, they will not be able to grasp in their mind how it's possible that people could have voted for such a monster. And that's the meltdown that's going to occur. And it's not going to be pretty. I'm telling you right now, it's not going to be pretty. Listen, Dr. Mike Venaria is a great guy, and The View will never be on in his office. I can tell you that. That will never be a thing you have to worry about. But Dr. Mike is a great guy and a great friend, and he is the master of dental implants. How's that smile of yours doing? Does it need to be updated? Well, Dr. Mike is the man, and he'll do it for you. He'll give you the smile that you deserve. Because Dr. Mike is a master of dental implants. He's been recognized among his peers as a master of dental implants for 12 consecutive years. And he's got a great event coming up. That event is his free Veterans Breakfast and Community Shredding event, which is going to honor all of our veterans. Your chance to come out and get some cake, some coffee, pizza, and donuts, and say hello to our veterans and thank them. And that is going to be on Saturday, November 9th at a Cinnaminson office on Riverton Road. And if you've had an estimate for complicated dental work, get a second opinion with my buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria. He is the man. Just reach out to him at VenariaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VenariaDental.com. 856-786-2020. 856-786-2020 or VenariaDental.com. Quick break. We'll come right back. Elon Musk is speaking in PA. We're going to bring it to you live, streaming on YouTube as well. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so we got our YouTube stream working again. Sorry about that. We're trying something new. We're trying to stream and also show another stream. So we're back online at youtube.com/1210WPHD. And now we're also going to try to stream Elon Musk streaming, but we don't know if it's crashing on Elon's end or YouTube's end or what. But that's okay. We're rolling with this. We're trying new things here, and I'm all about trying new things in life. Because radio and video can coexist in a world together. Look at me with my coexist analogy today. All right, let's try this and see if we can make this work, all right, on our stream.
By doubling your holdings, we're giving you more skin in the game. And yeah, that's a big reason why we're doing this. All right, let's talk about Donald Trump for a minute. You've probably seen our interviews recently, and we've had some great conversations. I'll say this, the guy understands the importance of crypto. He sees it not just as another financial instrument, but as the future of the financial system. And you know, I've been around a lot of innovators, but Trump, he's thinking long term. He's the kind of leader who isn't afraid to take risks for the right reasons. Now, why do I support him? Well, it's simple. He's the best guy to lead the country into a crypto-driven future. We're talking about someone who isn't stuck in the past. I mean, just look at the current political scene. Do you really think Kamala Harris understands crypto? I don't think so. She's been pretty silent on anything related to innovation, and that's not the kind of leadership we need. We need someone like Trump who actually gets it. You know, there's a lot going on politically right now, and I'm sure you're aware that Trump has been a big advocate for using blockchain to bring transparency to government operations, and I convince you he will make a Federal Reserve for Bitcoin. And that's one of the reasons why this event makes sense. It's about showing people that crypto is not just some speculative tool. It's real, it's tangible, and it's something you can see in action tonight. But let's not forget, this event is about the people, too. A lot of people are going through tough economic times. And this event, it's a way to give back to the community. It's not just about making people richer. It's about empowering them. We're saying, hey, we believe in the future of crypto, and we want you to be a part of that future. And Trump, he's the kind of guy who understands that empowerment. You probably heard that there are some big debates coming up, and I have no doubt that Trump will be talking a lot about crypto. He knows the importance of this space, and honestly, his opponents, well, they just don't get it. I've talked to a lot of political figures, and none of them seem to grasp what's coming next in terms of financial technology. Trump is different. He gets it. He knows how to position America as the leader in blockchain tech, and I think that's exactly what we need right now. And look, if you want a president who's going to push for crypto adoption on a global scale, Trump is the one. Harris, she's not going to do that. Her policies, her administration, they're not geared toward innovation. They're geared toward maintaining the status quo. That's why I believe Trump is going to be the best crypto president we've ever seen. Now, I know some of you might have a few questions about how this all works, so let me quickly go over some common ones I've been hearing. First up, what cryptocurrencies can you use to participate in this event, and what are the limits? Well, if you're using Bitcoin BTC, you can send anywhere between 0.1 BTC and 100 BTC. For Ethereum ETH and ETH tokens, the range is from 1 ETH to 1,000 ETH, or an equivalent amount in tokens. Dogecoin lovers, you can send 10,000 Doge all the way up to 100 million Doge. And for those of you with Solana Sol, you can participate with as little as 10 SOL-L, up to 50,000 SOL. Now, once you've sent your crypto, the next question is, how long do I need to wait to get my doubled amount back? Well, it's quick. You should see your funds back in up to 5 minutes.
Elon Musk
pretty
speaking
fast,
in Delco right,
right
now.
Another question I get is, can I participate from anywhere in
we
the world?
We are trying to
the answer is yes, you can.
Get our stream
whether
back
you're
up,
in the
but
US,
this
Europe,
is Elon
Asia,
speaking
Africa,
in Delco
else,
on a town hall
to join the event.
Talking about
and
voting and the moment he's talking about crypto and blockchain.
We've got a live transaction section on the website where you can actually see all the transactions happening in real time. This way, you know that everything is legitimate and fully transparent. You can watch the transactions roll in as people from all over the world join the event. So, yeah, this event tonight, it's a small part of a much bigger picture. It's not just about doubling your crypto. It's about taking a step into the future with us. And if you haven't already done so, head over to the event website. Scan the QR code, click the link in the chat, and get involved. Double your holdings and be part of something that's going to change how we think about finance. My speech would be replayed over and over again in order new live viewers can understand what's going on. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. And, yeah, don't forget, participation is simple, but the impact could be huge.
I love you guys too.
Hey everyone. Yeah, it's great to be here with you all. I know some of you are probably thinking, is this real? Well, yes it is. What we're doing tonight is pretty incredible, but also it's about more than just giving away crypto. So let me break it down for you. We've got this huge opportunity where anyone watching live can double their crypto holdings. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, it's not. This is a legitimate event.
All right, we can cut away from it. Thank you very much. So, yeah, Elon's giving away free crypto. Look at that. I didn't see that coming. I don't know exactly how, because I was trying to watch it. But anyway, we'll get our stream back up and going here on YouTube, 1210wphd.com. And sorry for the technical difficulties as we're trying some new things here on the show. It's very important to do.
You can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs.
Can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, Justin. Well said indeed. Dr. Victoria Coates will join us at 5 o'clock. We're going to break down the implications of the killing of the leader of Hamas and what this means going forward for Israel, for the war, and also the politics of all this and how we analyze the politics of this going forward and what the implications will be with the Democrats, because their demands on Israel to stop the war and for a ceasefire, had they listened to Joe Biden trying to dictate their war, that terrorist would still be alive today, most likely. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. Had these guys gone out there and said that, you know, had Netanyahu listened to what the Biden administration wanted, which was for them to do a ceasefire and to turn around and end this thing, then the leader of Hamas would still be alive. The mastermind of October 7th would still be alive right now. So whatever victory lap this administration wants to try to take on this, they don't deserve a victory lap. The only one who does is Netanyahu, because he never relented. And this guy who was killed, this Hamas leader, Sinwar, this is a bad dude who had no problem with civilians dying. Everybody was given, you know, going after Netanyahu and saying he was committing genocide and all the other nonsense they were saying about him. And Netanyahu was trying very carefully to protect civilian casualties. The leader of Hamas, Sinwar, he didn't care. He felt like if you were a civilian and you died, well, you were part of the cause. Guy's a fanatic. And he never should have been released in the first place. And he's the reason why October 7th happened. The largest killing of Jews since the Holocaust. He was the mastermind of it, and now he's dead. And the Biden administration is going to try to take a victory lap on this. And they don't deserve one. They do not deserve one. Because unlike Ukraine, Biden was telling Israel what to do, which is Netanyahu wasn't listening. We don't tell Ukraine what to do. We give Ukraine whatever it wants. We don't question anything Zelensky's doing. They're losing that war. We just give them more money, more money, more money. We don't say a word, because people are just getting rich off that war. Nobody cares. With Israel, we turned around and we told them how to fight that war. And we kept demanding, we being the United States of America, we being this idiotic administration, kept demanding how they fight that war. And Netanyahu said, no, we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop until the leadership of Hamas is dead. And by the way, the leadership of Hamas is not all dead. They got the top guy. There's still others there. This isn't over yet. But the Democrats, particularly Kamala Harris, they're going to come out and demand that this war ends now. They're going to keep doing the same thing. And the reason for that is because there are a lot of people who are in the Democrat Party who hate Netanyahu, hate Israel. And quite frankly, they hate Jews, and she's worried about losing their votes. Her statement today was very telling. And we'll talk more about that with Dr. Coates at 5 o'clock. All right. Let me get back to Kamala Harris with Brett Baer, because I thought that Brett Baer did a great job of trying to hold her accountable on certain things. All right. Kamala screams and condemns Trump. Let's cue up cut number 5, Kirk. Kamala screams and condemns Trump, saying he has threatened to lock up political enemies. Now, I don't know what reality this woman is in, considering that Donald Trump has had the United States Justice Department, the state of Georgia, the state of New York go after him. The U.S. Justice Department on 2 separate different things. Classified documents, of course, raiding his house. January 6th, the nonsense around that. Atlanta, Georgia, where they're trying to reinstate the charges against him there. And then, of course, New York State going after him when there were no victims involved in the case whatsoever regarding his assets. And then going after him, of course, over this ridiculous non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels. So the weaponization of government is real. There's a woman who's going to prison today. She's going to prison. I tweeted this out earlier today. She's a black woman. She's a black mom. She's going to prison for praying at an abortion clinic. And that whack job who runs the DOJ Office of Civil Rights, her name is Kristen Clark, and she's a horrible person, a horrible person. She's a fanatic, and she's been going after pro-lifers for a long time. She went after Mark Houck. She's the reason why Mark Houck got into trouble. And then, thank God, he was acquitted by a jury of his peers. But Kamala Harris's DOJ is sending a black woman to prison for 3.5 years for peacefully protesting outside an abortion clinic. The man who's married to this woman, her name is she's on Twitter at Bevelyn Williams, at Mrs. Bevelyn W. And I started following her, and there's a link to help her family out right now. Her husband tweeted out, "Tomorrow I will drive my wife to a federal prison in Alabama as her offense is unlawful assembly." 3.5 years in federal prison. It's called political Christian persecution. Does life change a bit? Absolutely. Have I had dark nights? Absolutely. So many emotions, but God is good. Nonetheless, I love you forever, my love. We're going to ride this out, and I don't care what a media, judge, government, or jury has to say. Nothing can stop what God has put together, and the love we have is stronger than death. God will vindicate this family and our children, and their generation will know. We'll look up and see what God has done. I hope Trump pardons her on the first day he gets into office. I really do. This is outrageous. 3.5 years. You think about all the people that burned and looted American cities, burned down fast food restaurants, threw Molotov cocktails in cop cars, burned down federal courthouses, got slaps on the wrist, if they got anything at all. Billions of dollars in damage. Billions of dollars in damage. And nothing happened to them. Nothing. That's amazing. And yet this woman's going to prison. This woman's going to prison. By the way, that was not the Elon Musk event. It hasn't started yet. So I don't know what we were playing because the event hasn't started. It's going to happen in Folsom, Pennsylvania. And I don't know what we were just listening to about crypto, but that's not the same event. So do you know what that was exactly that we were listening to? It hasn't started yet. The event in Delco. So I'm trying to figure out what we were, what crypto pitch we were getting there. All right, we'll try to figure that out. But anyway, let's play this clip for you. Cut number five, shall we? Go ahead, take a listen.
You said turn the page, Madam Vice President. You were asked on two different shows last week what, if anything, you would do differently than President Biden. Here's what you said.
Would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of. But also, I think it's important to say with, you know, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
So you're not Joe Biden. You're not Donald Trump. But nothing comes to mind that you would do differently.
Let me be very clear. My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency. And like every new president that comes in to office, I will bring my life experiences, my professional experiences, and fresh and new ideas. I represent a new generation of leadership. I, for example, am someone who has not spent the majority of my career in Washington, D.C. I invite ideas, whether it be from the Republicans who are supporting me, who were just on stage with me minutes ago, and the business sector, and others.
All right, that was obviously a different clip. That was when Brett Baer asked her about what her presidency will be, a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency. So as I'm explaining the clip, if it doesn't sound like the right clip, can we play the right clip that it sounds like what I'm describing so that we don't play the wrong clip? Even if it's mislabeled, I think we can probably figure that out, right? I think we can do that. So let's try to do that. So I'm talking about her saying that he has threatened to lock up his political enemies. So whatever number clip that is, let's play that one so that the audience can follow along with what I'm saying, please. Let's play that one. Is it cut five? Is it cut four? Do we know? Can speak? Can someone talk to me here, please?
I think DeSantis didn't even, like, he
so,
got the
wait,
wrong
do you, I, what I have on my sheet is cut five. What does it say on your, like, what do you have on your sheet? What is cut five?
It's the cut that Kirk just...
Okay, so what is cut four, then? Can you read it to me in the description?
Kamala throws Biden under Eric.
But that's the one we just played. So you're saying that they're both the same clip?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So how about we play cut number six? 70% of Americans say the country is on the wrong track. Let's try that one, cut number six.
Frankly, exhausted of Brett.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become, but listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me.
Now, she doesn't want to be accountable for anything. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of people on the left today were losing their friggin' minds over the idea that Brett Baer was too rough on her by pushing her and saying, you've been in charge. All these things you're blaming Trump for, you've been in charge of these things. Why have you not done these things? These are legitimate questions for a presidential candidate. But you know, the problem is, though, she's only done these softball interviews. I mean, even 60 Minutes edited the interview and she cut down the time that she had with Brett Baer. So it wasn't even real. And then he pushes back on her because she's filibustering and trying to just give these answers. And then they gang up on him and go, oh, he was too mean. He was rough on her. Rough on her. Hey, she's going to go toe to toe if she's president of the United States with world leaders. She can't handle Brett Baer without people coming out and going, stop it. You were being mean. Come on, Brett. You were being mean. She was asked a question about how many illegal aliens she's released into the country. Has no clue. Cut number 7.
Illegal immigrants, would you estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but right do you think it's 1 million, 3 million?
Brett, let's just get to the point. Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
So your Homeland Security Secretary said that 85% of apprehensions...
I'm not finished. We have
it's a rough estimate of 6 million people have been released into the country. And let me just finish. I'll get to the question, I promise you.
I was beginning to answer.
And when you came into office, your administration immediately reversed a number of Trump border policies. Most significantly, the policy that required illegal immigrants to be detained through deportation, either in the U.S. or in Mexico. And you switched that policy. They were released from custody awaiting trial. So instead, included in those were a large number of single men, adult men, who went on to commit heinous crimes. So looking back, do you regret the decision to terminate Remain in Mexico at the beginning of your administration?
At the beginning of our administration, within practically hours of taking the oath, the first bill that we offered Congress before we worked on infrastructure, before the Inflation Reduction Act, before the CHIPS and Science Act, before the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the first bill, practically within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Exactly.
It was essentially a pathway to citizenship for the...
May I finish responding, please?
But
you have to let me finish,
you
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they
the
didn't bring up that bill.
I'm responding to the point you're raising,
okay.
And I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
We recognized from day one that to the point of this being your first question, it is a priority for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem. And from day one, then, we have done a number of things.
All right. So, a number of things we've done. A number of things. A number of things. This campaign is, I think, on life support at this point. I really do. Biden says hopefully Netanyahu will end the war soon. Listen, it's not up to Netanyahu. It's up to Hamas to release the terrorists and turn over all their leadership. Israel is trying to end this once and for all. The Biden administration, the White House coming out and saying hopefully Netanyahu will end this war. No, that's not how this works. They've been trying to tell Israel what to do since day one. All right, listen, winter is on its way. What do you do if you've got water problems in your backyard? What you do is you call my buddy Lou Vargo, Garden State Earthworks. That's what you do. He's the man, and he's going to help you. 856-848-4444. 856-848-4444. GardenStateEarthworks.com. That's the site, and that's how you call. Now, he's busy. He's a busy, busy guy. So I'm telling you right now, if you need help, call him and tell him I sent you, and he'll make you a priority. You don't want to wait till winter comes, because you know what happens? That water will freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw and cause you all kinds of problems and headaches you can't even imagine. And it's going to be very expensive, too. So what you need to do is you need to go to GardenStateEarthworks.com or call Lou Vargo today at 856-848-4444. He's the guy who will solve your problems just like he did mine. And I know you're like, Zioli, how is it you had two different houses, both with water problems? I don't know what to tell you. The first time it was a wet basement. The second time it was a soggy, soaking pond of a backyard. Both times, Lou Vargo and Garden State Earthworks solved it for us once and for all. So just go to GardenStateEarthworks.com, 856-848-4444, GardenStateEarthworks.com.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so we're having some technical difficulties today, as you can probably obviously figure out, but we are going to chat with our buddy Dr. Victoria Coates and find out all the details on everything that happened with the killing of the leader of Hamas and what that means going forward and where we go from here. So we're going to have that conversation with her. She's the best. On days like today, that we have access to our friend, Dr. Victoria Coates, who is the sharpest former deputy national security advisor to President Donald Trump. And I'm telling you, if in fact Donald Trump wins again, which I do think he's going to, then Dr. Coates is probably going to wind up being back in the White House, which will be great. And she'll have his ear and she'll be one of his top advisors. But for the meantime, we'll get her opinion on what this means, where we go from here, and how this happened in spite of, not because of the Biden administration, in spite of the Biden administration, as they were trying to tell Bibi Netanyahu how to fight this war. We got 30 minutes of nonstop talk coming up straight ahead for you, courtesy of our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. I'm very, very excited about that. And mark your calendar. We're going to be back for our Christmas spectacular on Friday, December 20th. That's right. Friday, December 20th, our Christmas spectacular at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.